Everybody think.
Tonight, a queer exploration of Barbie the movie.
With your hosts, Speak High Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm thinking about going as Weird Barbie for Halloween.
Ooh, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina. As a child, I was definitely a proud member of the Church of Barbie.
Ooh, this is so fun. We're going to just get right into it.
Yes.
Like, so I only had one Barbie when I was growing up, and she was like some kind of, like, she was wearing like a glittery evening dress, and she was like bigger than all the other stuff that I played with, because like I played with like my brother's action figures, and I played with like, I don't know, Barbie was just like very large, so I didn't really have any other dolls that I felt like could like interact with her in a way where she wouldn't be like a giantess. So I basically, she had these like two little like fake diamond earrings that were like, you know, little plastic studs or whatever. And so I think I played with those because like I took them out and they were involved in like jewelry heists that my other action figures would become involved in. Yeah. So I was not really big into Barbie growing up, but it sounds like you were.
I was hugely into Barbie growing up. Eventually we'll talk about the movie, but right now we just wanted to talk about like our personal relationships with Barbie. I was very into Barbie as a kid. I had a ton of Barbies. One of my favorite games when I was little, for some reason, it was always just my dad and I that would do this. It was what I called making the dolls talk. And I'd say, Daddy, can we make the dolls talk? And we'd have these little scenarios with Barbie and her friends and all of that. And then when I was a little bit older, whenever my grandma would come over for the summer, we would play what she called alternate lifestyle Barbie, which was a version of Barbie where a lot of the characters were gay, which is very interesting now. I think it was initiated by her, and I think it was just like her trying to be like kind of trying to like bring a sort of liberal, like feminist, more modern slant to these kind of like historically patriarchal dolls. My grandmother was a very, very ardent feminist and Democrat. And I mean, was she gay? Who knows? She didn't grow up in a time when that was really very acceptable, but she might have been. But yes, so alternate lifestyle Barbie. I think she also liked to do that because the other side of my relationship with Barbie as a kid is that certain summers, my very fundamentalist Christian cousins would come and stay with us, and they were not allowed to play with Barbies because she was too promiscuous, which my Aunt Marlene would say just to me that the Barbies were too promiscuous, and she would chastise my mom for letting me play with them. So I suspect that my grandmother encouraged the alternate lifestyle Barbie as a bit of a way to antagonize her very Christian daughter-in-law, who she did not really approve of. So it was very political, you know, it was very complicated. But I loved Barbie. I had a lot of like Barbies of movies that I really liked. Like I had the Anastasia and Dimitri Barbie. I would act out all sorts of little scenes with them. I'd watch a scene on TV, and if I really liked it, I'd act it out with my Barbies. It was kind of, you know, as a kid who like loved stories and eventually loved to write, it was like a sort of early way of getting to, you know, kind of play God a little bit.
Nice. I love that. I also feel like what your aunt saying that like the Barbies are too promiscuous, like that ties right into the movie where they're saying like,
absolutely,
if people can put all this on a doll,
yeah,
like what does that say about like women in the real world? Because like the Barbies are too promiscuous, the Barbies are plastic dolls that came in a package, like is she saying that like your Barbies, you have been making them sleep around, or is she saying that just like the concept of Barbie is inherently promiscuous because she's like an unmarried woman who has a lot of outfits and a dream house?
Right, right. Well, is it any surprise that that this same aunt is like the type of woman who's like, well, you know, women shouldn't wear short skirts to tempt men into raping them because,
oh God. You
know, yes, yes. So anyway, that's a larger discussion. But it is fascinating the way that these dolls, and you know, this movie really explores this, are like such a lightning rod for people. They provoke these really strong feelings, and sometimes it's like feelings of like warmth and nostalgia, and sometimes it's feelings of hatred. And in this really interesting way, that's kind of happened in like the meta reaction to the film itself.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, when I was like, so when I was in college, like in the 90s and stuff, like at that time, it did sort of feel like Barbie was like kind of a representation of what was like wrong with the culture. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just, and the film gives voice to that too. Like, you know, it's a feature of the patriarchy, you know, these unattainable beauty standards, like no one really looks like this, you know,
yeah.
like we don't want little girls to think that this is the only way to like be a woman. So I didn't really have like a lot of nostalgia for Barbie really, but I think that this movie does a lot of things that are really complex. This movie does
yeah.
things that are more complex than the average bear of a movie. And one of them is that it holds space for all of these truths. Like it holds space for like actually having a doll that's like an adult woman who isn't a mother is like a progressive thing, because it allows women, like it allows little girls to imagine a future for themselves other than mommy. Like it holds sure. space for that. It holds space for like the critiques of Barbie. It holds space to make Barbie a little campy and a little ridiculous. And also like an idea that like perseveres and changes and lives on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It does encompass a lot. It has many, many layers to it, which I think we're starting to see is like, that's really a trend in the films that Greta Gerwig makes. And I think probably the way that she sort of sees life is that it is very many things. What I'd like to ask you before we sort of get into the meat of the movie is, what were you most intrigued by going to see this movie? What was it, the marketing? Was it the buzz around it? Was it, you know, the Greta Gerwig, the Margot Robbie? Like what was the thing that you were really excited to see?
Well, I kept forgetting that it was a Greta Gerwig movie. Like I would hear stuff about it, like, oh, the Barbie movie is coming out. And then I'd be like, oh, right, Greta Gerwig. Like that seems interesting. And then like yeah. all of the casting stuff seemed really interesting. You know, like it was so, it was very inclusive. Like I just felt like, you know, I don't know. And it just seemed like, with so many movies that are like sequels and that are like kind of the same movie repackaged as like 10 different movies, everything about this, like from the moment when you saw the preview and like Barbie is having this dance party and she like claps and says like, do any of you ever think about death? And it's just like,
yeah,
whoa, this is going to be like, this is not going to be like a movie that you've seen before.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing where I feel like, you know, to your point about like everything is a sequel or everything's part of a larger franchise, like so many movies now, I think so many people are kind of tired of everything being part of a franchise. And so it feels like oftentimes like the new, you know, Marvel movie or the new DC movie or the new this movie, it'll get billed as like, oh, they're really like shaking it up. They have, you know, a director who's really putting their own spin on it. And 9 times out of 10, they're pretty hindered by, you know, whatever the existing IP is, whatever the, you know, Disney overlords tell them. And this movie is a very interesting example. And I want us to talk more about this as we go through it. But like, you know, it's made with an existing property and it's made through Mattel. Like Mattel, you know, is a producer on this movie, and yet it still manages to feel really unique and original and not really like anything else that's getting made right now.
Yes. Well, I think that this movie, like, I guess let's start off by just saying this movie is so weird. It's such a weird movie. And that's what makes it so great. And also what makes it so surprising that it's doing so well, because with like a different, you know, without like all of the marketing and without like, I don't know, it just being like the right moment for this film, it seems like this could have been a movie that like kind of bombed and then became like a cult classic years later.
Yeah.
Like that's really kind of how it feels, because it is so weird. But I think it's great. I feel like Mattel had been wanting people to make movies of their properties for quite some time. And I feel like they basically, like when Greta Gerwig came up with this idea, they were like, she was like, I need to have free reign. And they were like, is Barbie going to have sex? And she was like, no. And they were like, okay, go for it. Like, I kind of feel like that is the level of like conversation that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I did find myself wondering what this movie would look like without the approval of Mattel, because I do think there were certain moments where I was like, it feels like they're going a little easy on Mattel. It feels like they're going a little easy on the sort of capitalistic side of all of this. You know, it would be kind of cool to see a version of this movie that is like breaking everything down, not just the patriarchy, but like other layers as well. But, you know, I first of all, I don't think you can get mad at a movie for not being the movie, like, for being its own thing and not being the movie that you imagine it could be. And second of all, I think that, like, with whatever constraints she had, she did incredible work. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen a movie that used the word patriarchy as much as this movie did.
Well, I'm going to say a couple things about that, one of which is, I think that there are plenty of like movies and media that break down the ways in which corporations are bad. And I don't think that there's really a movie that is like this funny that breaks down like the patriarchy quite like it does. And I feel like you're right. Like Mattel in this movie, they're not like evil overlords, but it's like a goof. Like the building looks like, you know, the building looks like a villain's hideout, kind of. Like, it has this big, like, you know, rotating Mattel. And, you know, all of the executives are men. And later, all of the men are on the tandem bicycle together. Like, it's a goof. Like, Mattel is
goofy. Totally.
Like,
yeah.
When someone swears, they put, like, a little Mattel symbol over their mouth so you can't see it. I feel like Mattel had a sense of humor about this movie, and I feel like it paid off because it's bringing them in like bajillions of dollars.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I wish that more corporations would take gambles like this, because I think they would pay off.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Can we talk about the gayness of this movie?
Oh, so yeah, for sure. One of the first things you notice about it is how colorful it is. And
yes.
I'm going to say that the colorfulness and the campiness immediately brought me back to our thoughts about But I'm a Cheerleader, which we talked about so recently.
Sure.
And it's unapologetically high femme. Like, not even feminine, but I think high femme as a gender presentation.
Oh, completely. It feels like a drag queen. I mean, it feels like it, like Trixie Mattel, you know, like was the set designer. Like it's everybody in this movie is in high drag.
Yeah. And I feel like on one hand, it's like Pinocchio retold. Like it's the doll that wants to become a real girl.
But it's also
like a little bit of Toy Story, like what are the toys doing when like the people who aren't playing with the, you know, but also it's Barbie Land as a place is like the hyper adrenalized reality of Mona Vanderwaal. Like this is, you know, this is the kind of creation, and everything. Like I know one of your notes was about Alan, who you were saying, like, Alan is non-binary, right? Oh my god, 110% I think Alan is non-binary.
Yeah.
One of the first scenes that we see are two of the Kens, who are kind of, like, you know, having this, like, beach machismo moment, where they're talking about beaching each other off. So you get, like you get this moment. Barbie herself is like totally disinterested in men, whether they're Ken or whether they are, you know, whether they're like men in the real world. And then of course, Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon, is super queer. And all of the Barbies who like are with her and kind of help to save Barbie Land seem pretty queer. Hari Neff is one of the Barbies. Like it's super gay. Have I missed any of the, there's the Indigo Girls song, like
I think
it's hella gay all the way through.
Oh my gosh. The use of the Indigo Girls song was just incredible, especially because it's the way that it's used is it's like every time Barbie is like kind of getting out of Barbie Land and just like being her carefree self and sort of, you know, exploring herself, experimenting, some might say, that's like the music cue, which is incredible. She's also like what she is fixated on, as you said, not her relationships with men, are her relationships with women. Like that's where her investment is. Every night is girls' night, you know? and there, she has these very significant moments, like her whole first meeting with Weird Barbie feels very charged. There's, of course, you know, Weird Barbie offers her a pair of Birkenstocks, the official, you know, lesbian sandal. It's incredible. And her moments with Gloria also feel very queer. I don't know how much of that is just that maybe Margot Robbie and America Ferrera had like really great chemistry, which they did, but there's this, you know, the first moment when they see one another, and granted it's there's a reason for this in the plot, but there's this moment when they look at one another and it's like in a movie when two characters, you know, it's like Tony and Maria seeing each other for the first time. It's like anytime two characters who are about to fall in love with each other, look at each other for the first time. That is the charge. And that is really sort of the central bond of the film. And, you know, a lot of this movie is sort of America Ferrera and Margot Robbie as like the two moms with their kid kind of figuring it out. America Ferrera's husband is like very just off on it being unimportant.
I have a note that America Ferrera has her own superfluous Ken.
Yeah.
That's who she married.
Exactly. And, you know, and the idea that like Barbie, Gloria is America Ferrera's character's name, and the idea that Barbie is what brings Gloria comfort, you know, is so interesting. I was so struck with it. You know, it there wasn't, and I do wonder if this was like a Mattel thing. There's not like a lot of main text queerness happening, but the subtextual stuff is, oh my God, there's so much of it. Every outfit that Ryan Gosling wears, like, it's amazing.
I mean, that's tough to say if it's a Mattel thing or if it's this movie is going to be released in China and we want it to make like a gazillion dollars worldwide. But yeah, it would have been like, it would always be great to have more explicit queerness, but like, whoa, the subtextual queerness here was absolutely off the charts.
And I also feel like weirdness kind of became the metaphor for queerness. Yeah. I mean, especially by having Kate McKinnon represent Weird Barbie, and, you know, Kate McKinnon, who like, I feel like Kate McKinnon is somebody who, obviously, she's queer, but, like, the energy that she brings is always a very queer energy, and it's also a very weird energy. And so there's a lot of discussion in this film about what does it mean to be weird, and is it bad to be weird, or is it good to be weird? Should we celebrate being weird, or should we sort of banish being weird? And it does start to feel after a while like, oh, they're talking about being gay. And obviously there's a lot, you know, weird doesn't have to be a metaphor for gay, but I think, you know, like so many movies, like this movie is what you bring to it. And for me, that really resonated.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, not to quote someone who is super bad, as we now know that Joss Whedon is, but when he would talk about like Tara and Willow and the ways that the network was trying to kind of censor the queer relationship, like, he always said, it made the writing a lot better, the way that we had to, like, be so deliberate about those things. And I feel like that is also true in this film. Like, the carefulness that they have to bring to it makes things, like, really deliberate and really fun.
Yeah, because they probably actually had to think about it harder in a sense. And it feels very deliberately crafted. And it kind of reminds me, like, at some point we'll talk about sort of other Greta Gerwig's other films, but in both Lady Bird and Little Women, there's, I think, also this sort of subtextual queerness that feels very prominent in the narrative to me. And this real emphasis that, like, a woman's greatest relationships are with other women. I don't know. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, man. I totally agree. So it is, as we said, like, a gloriously weird movie.
Yep.
We have, like, I am hard-pressed to think of another, like, big commercial film like this that has a narrator in the way that this film does. Like, not a narrator as in, like, a voice that tells you, like, many years ago, down where the crawdads, you know, like, this is the story of my life, blah, blah, blah. But, like, a movie that has a narrator in this way, this, like, kind of, like, cheeky, ironic way. And, of course, it's Helen Mirren, which, like, oh, my goodness. Narrate the world, please.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fun. It really works. I mean, the whole opening of this film with the little girls playing with the Barbie dolls and this weird, like, silhouetted cliffside kind of Oregon Trail sort of motif, you know, the whole thing being narrated by Helen Mirren. It's just, it's wacky and it's immediately engaging. Like, you're instantly like, oh, I don't know what this ride is, but I'm on it.
I love it. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's so fun.
So you have this narrator, you're like pulled in immediately. And there are so many just like funny, weird details of Barbie Land, like the way everyone's feet stay like in that high arch position.
Yeah.
The way that like the Barbies just like fly down from their houses, just like you would play with them, like in a house where they're like coming down like that. The simulation of experience that is like, you know, as we know from PLL, like a key feature of the dollhouse, like this is like, you're not having the experience, but you're like pretending to have breakfast. You're pretending to like drink milk. You're pretending to like do all these things. And also the way that like, Barbie is friends with all the other Barbies, and so she spends her day like going to a Nobel Prize ceremony where one of the Barbies is winning a Nobel Prize, and she's attending a Supreme Court proceeding where one of the, you know, Barbies is like the lawyer and the other Barbies are on the Supreme Court. And then of course the president comes to Barbie's house party, because that's the way you play with your dolls. Like one of them is the president, and one of them is a doctor, and one of them is like regular Barbie, and they just all like play together and interact together as extras in all of these scenes.
Oh, it's so fun. And it's the way that they use kind of the intro of like the way that Barbie Land is supposed to operate, where everything is just perfect all the time. And then it going into like all of the little details of like when the real world is sneaking in, of, you know, the bit of her, she's in the shower and there's water and it's cold, you know, like, and you know, there's actual milk and it's bad and her feet are suddenly flat, and it's just, it's really, really fun. And it, you know, I was finding myself thinking about kind of the way that Barbie Land functions is that it's like this, it's like a feminist utopia, and yet there's also like kind of this lack of free will. And it was making me sort of think about like second wave feminism, and making me think about a conversation that I remember having with my mom not that long ago, where we were talking about kind of the idea of like, for her, you know, a woman not having a job didn't even feel like an option, because you had to have a job, because you had to push back against all of the societal norms saying that you shouldn't have a job, and that kind of in a certain way became its own new societal norm that like a woman had to work, even if she didn't maybe necessarily want to. And that the idea of like being a, you know, staying home and being a housewife was like, didn't even occur to her as something she could want, even if she did want it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting take on second wave feminism. I mean, yeah, if that was her specific, I feel like I always used to hear people say like, oh, the thing that's wrong with feminism is that like it says that I can't be a housewife I don't know. I guess I'm an idealist and I am an optimist, but like I've always felt like, you know, kind of the thing about feminism, at least how it's supposed to be, is like you can be anything and there's nothing that you have to be. Like, but ideally.
Yeah. No. I totally agree with you that is the ideal version. But I kind of think that Barbie Land is like playing with that idea a little bit of like, it's a feminist utopia, but it's a feminist utopia where like you have to look perfect all the time, you know?
It's like, I feel like it shows this idealized feminist vision for what a world could look like, where it was legitimately assumed women could do anything and everything. Like the construction crew is a bunch of women, and like the garbage collectors are all women. And like, it's like the women are like the astronauts, and the women are like flying the plane, and the women are on Mount Rushmore, and like all of the incredible things that are being done 100% are being done by women. And Ken, like the when I say Ken, I mean like the Ryan Gosling Ken. Like the Kens all appear like their job is beach. Like that it's not lifeguard. It's not like, you know, it's just beach. They just hang out at the beach. That is all that they do. That is all that they are for the majority of the movie. And I just think that like, it's making like a very subtle but very like satirical point of like, what would the world be like if we legitimately like believed that women could be all of these things, and like the way that Barbie Land exists in contrast to the real world where we are aggressively not there.
What do you make of the fact that even within Barbie Land, somebody like Weird Barbie is ostracized?
Oh, that's such a good question. And why is she ostracized? Like, she used to be like the other Barbies, but then someone played with her too hard, and now she's like strange looking. She's always in the splits. And she smells like basement. I think it's because like, I think it's because conformity, like it's the conformity of the dollhouse, basically.
Sure. Yeah. And I was kind of finding myself thinking about like matriarchy versus patriarchy, and how it's not just a one-to-one, because of course it can't be. And yet there's like the Barbies kind of realize that like the way that their society has been functioning actually isn't totally awesome for everybody.
Yeah. Well, also, who's hanging out at Weird Barbie's house? Like, who's helping when the other Barbies are brainwashed? It's like the gay Barbies. It's like non-binary Alan who leads them there. It's like the gay Ken with the magic earring.
With the earring,
and also sugar daddy Ken.
Who is, oh my like, god!
Yeah,
like what an incredible visual.
Yeah, it's the gays. It's the gays that are hanging out at Weird Barbie's house, 100%.
And it's the gays who will save us all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely. And it also really goes into the ways that patriarchy harms men, right?
I'm like, this movie is like, it's like so fun, but it's doing such serious work. Like, yes, yeah. It 100% goes into the ways that patriarchy hurts men too. And like, you hear people say that, but like this movie like really amply demonstrates it. Like in the ways of like the Kens want to turn Barbie Land into Ken Land, because Ken has gone to the real world. He's discovered that men are in charge, men rule the world, And in like, you know, 5 minutes there, it's puffed him up to like come back and like spread the message of patriarchy to everyone else. But also, like, I think one of the really interesting things is the like deep unimaginativeness of Kenland. Like, what happens? What happens in Kenland? They like play volleyball, and all of the Barbies like offer them brewski beers. Like, that's what you're doing. Like, the Barbies were like flying planes and going to space and stuff, and in Kenland, like, we're just all watching movies about horses and drinking brewski beers and playing that one song on guitar over and over and over again. Oh my goodness.
God, all of the details. First of all, when you were talking about Ken spending like 5 minutes in the real world and deciding that he's, you know, ready to take on, create the patriarchy, it reminded me of Toby, you know, going to the police academy and coming back and being like, okay, I'm ready to save you all, little ladies. But yeah, oh my gosh, all of that, the bit with the horses was so damn funny. It was just, you know, it was one of those things, and maybe we can talk a little bit about Ryan Gosling in this movie, because it was one of those things where I was like, there were a couple moments where I was like, okay, maybe, like, maybe the movie doesn't strictly need this moment of Ryan Gosling for plot, but oh my God, he's so funny in this movie. And my question for you is this Ryan Gosling's best role?
Oh, I definitely think that it is. And I will go further than saying that this is his best role. I am going to say, like, I know that Ryan Gosling has been in a lot of movies. I know that he's been in a lot of movies that people like that have won awards. You know, he was in La La Land. He was in Drive. He was in, like, The Notebook. I firmly believe that, like, in 50 years, the Barbie movie is the only movie with Ryan Gosling in it that people are going to have ever seen. The only movie that I've seen him in that I felt like was even in the same league as that. He was in, like, it was a really kind of like early Ryan Gosling. It was called the Place Beyond the Pines, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I thought he was great in that. Yes. Like, that was the only other thing that I've really seen him in where I was like, oh wow, he was great in that movie. But he was even better in this film.
And Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I just have much more to say about him.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm a pretty big Ryan Gosling fan. I think he's really enjoyable in a lot of movies. I pretty much always think he elevates the material of films that he's in. I am like a person who likes La La Land. I don't know if I've said that on the podcast before. I know that maybe is a little bit of a hot take, but I think it's a fun movie. That being said, he, in this movie, just... he's so good because he's hilarious. Like, he's just really, really funny, but he's also playing all of these, like, these subtleties and these insecurities in this way that, like, I have a feeling if I were to watch the movie again, I'd actually see a deep sadness to his Ken, Beach Ken. His job is beach. It's a common misconception that he's a lifeguard. Because he's really just like, he's trying to figure out who he is, and he can only think of himself in relation to Barbie, which is like so often, right? These, we've talked about like movies and TV shows where a female character only knows who she is, like how Arya really only knows who she is in relation to Ezra, you know, and not that I'm saying that this is the same dynamic, but I just think that there is, there's a lot going on under the surface of Beach Ken.
Okay, so the thing that, I don't know if this is actually one of the jokes in the movie, is that Depression Barbie just lays around and watches the BBC Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth, like, over and over again. But I'm going to refer to the BBC Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth, and I'm going to talk about the character of Mr. Collins, who is played by David Bamber. And I had, like, on DVD, I think I had, like, a director's cut where at one point they talked about David Bamber and how Mr. Collins, like, that role is, like, I would argue, like, the funniest role in Pride and Prejudice. Like, he has, like, many speeches that are extremely hilarious. And they said that, like, a lot of people who came in and auditioned for that, like, they were playing it up for the laughs. And then David Bamber came in, and his Mr. Collins was so self-serious that it made everything funnier. Like, he was the right choice because that was the way. And I feel like Ryan Gosling does that. Like, Ryan Gosling is a self-serious Ken. Like,
yeah,
it's not about whether Ken is, like, laughing at himself or if people are laughing at Ken. Like, he is playing Ken like a real character in this, like, movie that is about dolls. And I think he just does it to absolute perfection.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when you were talking about that, I was actually thinking of another Pride and Prejudice adaptation, which is Fire Island. And the way that Conrad Riccamora's hit, how apparently the story was, like, when he came in as the sort of Darcy character, he was the only one who made Joel Kim Booster nervous, who kind of made him, you know, got him off, knocked him off his feet a little bit. And I think that, you know, it was a very smart choice, because I feel like the obvious choice for Ken in a Barbie movie would be like Channing Tatum or something. Mm-hmm. And I think Channing Tatum would, I like Channing Tatum. I think he'd do a fine job. But I think that, like, somebody like Ryan Gosling, there's just something there that just works in that role. Yeah, go ahead.
I, like, if you said, like, who is somebody who kind of, like, looks like a Ken, I would actually have said, like, Ryan Reynolds over Ryan Gosling. But I feel like, I can't imagine, like, having seen this role. And this is a movie that has a bunch of different Kens, but I can't imagine anyone else being the main Ken other than Ryan Gosling. I think he plays every facet of Ken so perfectly.
Oh, I agree. And lest we heap all of our praise on the male actor, Margot Robbie is phenomenal in this movie. I feel like she's getting less of the attention than Ryan Gosling because she's sort of the straight man, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. But all of her subtleties of going from, you know, life is plastic and fantastic to somebody who wants to be in the real world. You know, I think of that, the moment when she's sitting at the bus stop and she, like, looks over at the old lady and she looks up at the sky and she's experiencing these things for the first time. She's experiencing real air and people, you know, crying and, you know, trees and somebody with wrinkles on their face and all of these things that she doesn't experience in Barbie Land. And you can see her sort of falling in love with this world in real time. And, you know, Margot Robbie, who's an incredible crier, she starts to cry. It's just a gorgeous moment.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. She's absolutely fantastic in this movie. And I really loved her as Harley Quinn. So
yeah.
It's hard for me to say, like, that this is her best role, but I think it is. Like, I think that this is just a movie. Like, this is a movie that is perfectly cast from top to bottom. Like, everybody who has a role in this movie, having seen it, it's hard to imagine anybody else but them playing that role.
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. Can we talk a little bit about Gloria?
Yes. Okay. So I love Gloria. And I also just want to say that, like, the first time I really became aware of America Ferrera was when she was in the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movies. Mm. And then, so, like, that was happening. And then, like, Ugly Betty was happening. And then, I mean, I'm sure she did, like, lots of stuff in between, like, Ugly Betty and then Superstore. And now this movie. I am so grateful for the career of America Ferrera. I'm so grateful that America Ferrera is an actor who we've gotten to see grow up in front of us. And
yeah,
that she has, like, she's landed here on Gloria, this, like, you know, kind of, like, you know, kind of tired, kind of sad, trying to make it all work, mom. And, like, we've seen that character a million times. Like, you know, the overburdened, like, estranged from their husband a little bit. you know, estranged from their kid a little bit, tired, over it, like, thankless job, mom. Like, that character is a staple. But Gloria is, like, so much more. She's, like, dark, and she's weird, and she's the one who accidentally created, like, you know, existential thoughts of death Barbie and cellulite Barbie and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that about her character.
It was really wild to watch this movie and be like, oh, my God, America Ferrera is at the age where she's playing the mom of a teenager. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I like that she's, you know, that she is like weird and creative and a little bit dark and a little bit lonely, and that the movie doesn't, like, it's not that she, like, she ends the movie all bright and shiny and perfect and happy, you know, like, she, mm-hmm. The movie is basically saying, like, all of these emotions are part of being human and are important parts of being human. And to try to block that out, like, really cuts you off from your humanity. What did you think of, you know, the now viral speech,
yeah,
possible being a woman speech?
I thought it was a really good speech. I thought it was up there with like St. Crispin's Day. I feel like it's also advanced math that, like, the movie makes a lot of choices that, like, a lesser movie would not have gone for. This movie, the cure for the Barbies being brainwashed by patriarchy is cognitive dissonance. It's like the fact that, like, acknowledging cognitive dissonance is the fix, like, is what allows you to, like, reconcile and continue your ability to live in the world. Like, that is some advanced calculus for, like, yeah, a blockbuster movie, I feel.
Oh, yeah, it's like we're getting a philosophy, like, 102 course, mm-hmm. You know, watching this film, absolutely.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about it?
Oh, you know, so it was one of those things where, like, I saw kind of the viral clip of it before I saw the movie, and I feel like it was a little bit easy to read that and be like ever so slightly cynical about, like, okay, so it's all coming to this big feminist speech, and then actually seeing her perform it and seeing it come out of this moment of, like, Barbie kind of giving up in this way that is, like, equal parts funny and tragic, it is very powerful, and she delivers the hell out of it. You know, she just, I would love to know just the process of her memorizing that speech and you know, like, working with Greta Gerwig to decide how she was going to perform it and all of that, because it was wonderful. It was a fantastic moment.
Yeah, it was, yeah, no notes. And I, again, like, when we talk about the movie being perfectly cast, I cannot imagine anyone else delivering it or selling it, like, with the impact that she did. Kristen knows somebody who watched this movie and who then, like, she was talking about it with Kristen. She was like, well, I thought the Barbie movie was kind of sad. Kristen was like, what? Like, it's not a sad movie particularly. And then this woman was like, I mean, like, when she was talking about, like, how hard it is to be a woman, like, that made me sad. And I was like, okay, has this chick seriously never experienced patriarchy or realized that it existed until she saw the Barbie movie? Maybe so. Good on you, sister. But I felt, yeah, like, that was so interesting that it actually, like, inspired some introspection in an obviously not very introspective individual.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so interesting how, you know, I think when people are having this very heated reaction to the film, I think a lot of it is probably coming down to that speech, right? It's like, well, how dare you say it's impossible to be a woman? And, you know, unfortunately, you have a lot of women coming out and being like, well, sort of double agents of the patriarchy there. But I think, like, one of the things that I loved about the speech and about the way that it was performed is that she's not even, like, particularly fired up. She's not delivering it as an inspiring moment. She's exhausted. Like, she's like, this is exhausting. Like, I am exhausted. You are exhausted. Aren't we all so tired that we're still having to have these conversations? And, you know, that's kind of part of why I think it's so relevant and right that this movie came out when it did, when we're at this moment in time where, like, you know, many people's rights are being stripped away and there's a lot of fear about further rights being stripped away, and people who stripped those rights away are feeling really fired up, you know, that it, to be able to have a character in this huge blockbuster literally, you know, giving specific direct voice to some of this, I think is very important.
I totally agree. And I also feel like one of the things I love about this movie is that it's not trying to win anybody over. Like, it's not trying to, like, both sides anything. It's not trying to, like, it's not trying to say, like, this is the voice for everything. And this is, like, a voice that we're going to give for, like, the pick-me ladies who are like, I've never had any problems. I don't know what this movie is talking about. Like, it doesn't concern itself with that at all. It concerns itself with, like, this story and telling it in, like, a really powerful way. And I love it. I'm so here for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's, you know, I kind of had that moment the first time they said the word patriarchy, and it was sort of this shock to the system of, like, oh, this movie is going there. Like, this movie is giving, like, very direct voice to this, and it's very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. So you had mentioned, like, you feel like Alan is non-binary. Can we, let's hear your case for it. I agree with it, but I want to hear your case anyway.
Well, I think that, I mean, first of all, you cast Michael Cera, who it would have been great to cast a non-binary actor in this role, but I think that Michael Cera is an actor who for a long time has sort of been cast as, like, non-threatening soft boy in a lot of things. And he's in this kind of rainbow striped sort of this outfit that really looks like it could be worn of by somebody of any gender. It's kind of, it's not particularly form fitted. It's sort of, you know, there are definitely some lesbians who would wear this outfit to Pride. Absolutely. And he's just Alan, and there's just one Alan, and he sort of exists on his own. And he doesn't fit in with the Kens. He doesn't really like being with the Kens. He isn't buying into the brainwashing, but he's not a Barbie either. He sort of exists in this, I'm using he pronouns because those are the pronouns that the movie uses for Alan. But he sort of exists in this, like, kind of liminal space. And he is also part of, like, the queer team up at the end of the film. And he seems to really, you know, like, fit in with the girls. He also seems to maybe have a crush on some of the Kens. He's, like, interested in Barbie, but it doesn't really feel like romantic interest the way it is with Ken. It feels more like maybe a curiosity, a gender expression kind of aspiration, something like that. I don't know. I just think he's a very interesting character. What about you?
I totally agree. I think that this movie is, like, we talked about, like, the kind of high femme drama of the Barbies. And also, like, the very stylized masculinity of the Kens. And the way that Alan, like, does not fit in with either of those things. Like, Alan is very much, like, a genderless character. And I also think that that is super interesting because we hear that he and the Barbies have been having to give the Kens foot massages. So even the Kens perceive Alan as apart from them and as, like, beneath them in the ruling class of patriarchy, which I think is interesting to note. And I also think that, like, one of, like, when we talk about the ways that this movie is, like, extremely, extremely subversive, like, when we think about all of the anti-trans legislation that is happening in our country and in the, like, just, like, bizarre focus on people's genitals and, like, what restroom they're going to use and, like, what, like, the fact that, like, these are all dolls. Everybody in this story is a doll, and none of the dolls have male parts or lady parts. Like, all of their parts look at the, every piece of gender in this movie is performance.
Yeah.
And yet you understand that the Kens are the masculine performers and the Barbies are the femme performers, and that Alan is something that is apart from that. And I would also kind of say that Weird Barbie is apart from that as well.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that. I would agree with that too. Yeah. No, I think so. I think that that's really true. And I think that, like, that moment when stereotypical Barbie and Beach Ken are in the real world, and they're kind of being, Barbie's being catcalled, and she's like, you know, well, I just want you to know, like, I don't have any genitals. And then Ken immediately is like, I have genitals. I have all the genitals, or whatever he says. Like, it's just this kind of, it does make it also ridiculous the way that people, you know, it's very much in the way that, like, drag makes the Sasha Velour thing, like, gender is a construct, tear it apart. Like, it makes you realize how stupid the fixation on all of this is. This movie, I think, is doing something very similar. And to your point about Weird Barbie, I think that there's another level of that that is quite interesting, is like the idea of, you know, at the time that little girls are, like, cutting their Barbie's hair and making them wear strange outfits and, you know, maybe scribbling on their face or whatever, that can, not always, but that can sometimes be a point when little girls are kind of exploring their gender identity. And yes. What does it mean to be a girl? And maybe I don't want to be a girl, or maybe I want to dress like a boy, or maybe I want to cut my hair, you know? And so I like that level as well. And it's one of the few moments in the film when we sort of break from the Barbie Land reality and actually see a child playing with a doll.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's deployed really effectively.
And I also like the moment when America Ferrera's character, when Gloria says, I had a weird Barbie, and Kate McKinnon's like, yeah, you did. Like, I feel like that's a nice little, like you were talking about, like, kind of the queer subtext. I felt like that was another, like, very strong moment of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. What did you make of kind of Barbie and Ken as, like, Adam and Eve figures?
Ooh, interesting. I think that Ken is not in any way interesting enough to be Adam. so that would be my first thought. But also, I just think I really thought that their story was so interesting, because Ken's love for Barbie is like, it's like a real thing about his character. Like, when they're out in the real world and he, like, within 5 seconds, like, discovers, like, oh, like, men look at me, like, you know, men look at me really differently here. Like, everybody looks at me differently. I'm respected. Like, there's no undertone of violence. And Barbie's like, ooh, mine definitely has undertones of violence. Like,
yeah.
Like, he realizes right away what's going on. And he tries to tell Barbie, and he doesn't persist in trying to tell her because he loves her so much. And it's just like, oh, man, dude, this is like, it's something. But I like the way that, like, you know, and Mattel is like, oh, you know, her happy ending is she gets to be in love with Ken. And then that little girl is like, no, that is not her ending.
Yeah.
I love that that wasn't the ending. I love that Ken got to have a happy ending of being Ken-uff, and that Barbie's, like, you know, Barbie's end game does not have to be an OTP. Marlene, yeah. Are you listening?
Yeah.
It can still feel like a totally satisfying ending.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. I'm going to probably paraphrase this badly. And also, you, as has been well established on this podcast, I am no biblical scholar. but I think I read a thing where Greta Gerwig was talking about the idea of, like, Barbie and Ken as kind of the inverse of Adam and Eve, because, like, Ken was created out of Barbie and he exists only in relation to Barbie. He does not exist as, like, his own figure, because he was made of Barbie in a sense. And I think what's cool is, like, kind of what you were saying, by the end of this film, he's able to kind of, with Barbie's help, free himself from that. And this movie is really establishing, like, you get to be your own person. And even, you know, the final joke of the film that Barbie is at her gynecologist appointment, which is very funny. And yet it's this idea of, like, the simplest things, when you have not had, like, total autonomy, the simplest things feel revelatory.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Like, when we think about how, like, a different movie, like, a more cookie-cutter version of this film would have been, like, Barbie and Ken ride off into the sunset together in the convertible. Or it would have been, like, everything is fixed when Gloria and her daughter, like, come to, like, have better understanding of one another. Like,
sure. Oh,
you know, like, I feel like there are a lot of facile, like, endings that were available here that the movie didn't go for. And I am so, so appreciative of all of those choices. Like, this movie is not a movie that, like, shies away from, like, the complexity of human existence, and it holds space for, like, multiple truths to exist at once, and multiple, like, it also says, like, it doesn't say, like, people who love Barbie are correct and people who hate Barbie are wrong. Like, it doesn't say that at all. It kind of says, mm-hmm. like, there are a lot of reasons that you might like or not like, or think this is important or think that this is silly. But this is, like, one story that we're going to tell about this. And I think that's really, like, wow. How refreshing.
Yeah, and it's also, that's how kids play with Barbies, too, right?
Yeah.
You tell a story, and then you're done with that story, and then you tell a new story. And I don't know, a line that was kept kind of rattling through my head throughout the movie was, give me back my girlhood, it was mine first. And the idea that kind of, by the end of the film, Barbie sort of gets to do that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 100%.
You know. 100%. Yeah.
Now, as we continue to talk about gender in this movie, this is not an idea that, like, is my idea. I read this online. Someone was talking about the idea of Hari Nef's Barbie being a trans Barbie. And in the world of this movie, like, that does not mean that that Barbie was assigned Ken at birth. In the world of this movie, that means that a little girl somewhere was playing with that Barbie and decided it would be a trans Barbie. And I feel like that is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That feels very in line with my alternative lifestyle Barbie that I used to play as a child.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I thought you were going to say, that means that the child that played with that Barbie was a trans child, which I also really love.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, could be or could not be, but, like, the way that the rules of this universe seem to work with, like, the way that Gloria informs, like, what's going on with existential thoughts of death Barbie, it seems like that would be how it would work for a trans Barbie to also exist.
I love that. I think that's great. That's great.
Now, I have a theory that is my theory. I don't know if other people online have this theory because I haven't looked for it. But what do you think about the idea that Will Ferrell's character is an escaped Ken?
Oh, tell me more about this.
Well, okay. He acts like a total goof. He appears to not really have many real world skills. He drums on the table with little drumsticks and, like, falls over when he hears that Barbie has escaped into the real world. He knows how to get to and from Barbie Land, which is a thing that, like, most people don't seem to know. Maybe he knows because he's the CEO of Mattel, but he, like, talks about, you know, he talks about rollerblades. He like knows. He knows exactly how to get there and what you do. And he wants to save Barbie Land, even when they're talking about, like, well, the Mojo Dojo Casa houses are flying off the shelves. And he says, like, you know, what does it matter? Like, as long as we're making money. And he, like, poo-poos executive number two for that suggestion and says, like, no, we have to do this. We have to do this for Barbie. He loves Barbie in the way that Ken loves Barbie, I think.
Wow. Wow. So I just Googled to try to see if this was like a theory, and everything that I'm coming up is not, I might have to be more specific with my search. I like this a lot. I think that this is a really interesting idea of like, his character is what happens when a Ken is like let loose in the real world. Because yeah. When he first shows up, I was expecting him to be evil. Right. And he's not evil. He's not totally harmless either, but he's kind of trying to do what he thinks is right. And it just happens to not be what's ultimately right for Barbie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that theory. In that reality, who do you think is his Barbie?
Oh, I think that's a super interesting question. I think he might be, I don't know. I felt like if I really wanted to like go deep into like writing up the conspiracy theory of it, he's real startled when he sees Midge.
He is. Oh gosh, the bit with Midge was so funny, and I saw the movie with Kelsey and my parents, and afterwards my mom was like, oh my god, I had the Midge doll. She was so creepy. Her stomach came off and there was baby in there. It was so weird.
Yeah, so who knows, maybe he's a Ken who was like the father of the Midge baby and got exiled to the real world. Who knows?
Oh my god. Who can say? Oh my god. That would be amazing. What did you think of Rhea Perlman as Ruth Handler?
Loved it. Again, perfect casting. Perfect to the core.
I loved that too. I loved that casting especially because I feel like with Rhea Perlman, like you always sort of expect her to be kind of gruff and silly and over the top. And I think it was such a smart choice to have her be this sort of soft, elegant, kind of this warm presence who was also still very strong. I really appreciated the way this movie included older women and had stereotypical Barbie have these really significant moments with them.
Yeah, I think having it be, I think that the casting for Ruth, It makes it so that role is not entirely just like Saturn, that it gives it this edge because it's, it's Carla from Cheers, It gives it, it gives it like that little bit where like even Ruth is not just like, not just like a goddess figure in this universe, but like is like a complex character who has like tax evasion issues and who has like, their own complicated backstory. And I love it. I think that this movie, no movie is like a perfect movie, but like, man, I love this movie. For a summer blockbuster, this movie gets real, real close.
Yeah. The final kind of moments between Ruth and Barbie that are very maternal and just, I found incredibly moving, like really just, brought tears to my eyes in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah.
Can we have a little ranking of the Greta Gerwig movies?
They might differ,
but for you personally, not what you think is the best film, but for you personally.
Okay, I'm going to say, maybe this is recency bias, but I'm going to say that Barbie is at the top because I don't think anybody else could have made this movie. I don't think anybody else's mind could have created this movie.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I'm so grateful that she made it and that we got to see it. So I'm going to say this movie's number one. And I'm going to say Little Women is number two. And so that actually, I love all of her movies, but shockingly, that puts Lady Bird down at number three.
I mean, I can't argue with that rating. I think for me personally, Little Women is number one just because I just love that story so much. And as much nostalgia as I have towards Barbie, I think I probably have even more nostalgia towards Little Women. Mm. So I think Little Women, and that's another movie where the casting is so good.
So perfect.
Oh my God. So I think that that one would have to be number one, then Barbie, and then Lady Bird. But again, I mean, this is like ranking, you know, your favorite ice cream flavors or something. Like, they're all fantastic. It's just a matter of, like, which one slightly edges out.
I totally agree. Yeah, I love Little Women also. I mean, we did a podcast episode about Little Women. It was amazing. And I feel like her interpretation of Little Women, like, it took a story that we know so well, and it still made it feel like new, you know?
What a gift
to have her making movies at the same time that we are here on this planet and under late stage capitalism.
Yeah, I agree. And also I think that, you know, that those movies also do this interesting thing of, like, they are kind of about how we tell stories, mm-hmm. as they're telling mm-hmm. the stories. And they're kind of, I mean, Little Women has essentially a choose your own adventure style ending.
Yeah. Which
is very, you know, some people really didn't like, I love that choice. I think it's incredible. And I think that, like, both Little Women and Barbie do this interesting thing where, like, they become, when you get down to it, they become about the process of Greta Gerwig making the film. Like, she almost becomes a character in the process. And I love that. I think it's really cool. And I also think that that's, like, something that male directors have been doing forever in ways that I find pompous and annoying. And so I love that, like, Greta Gerwig is doing her own version of that in a way that I find really cool and interesting. And, like, you know, letting herself take up space in her creative work, which I think is really important.
Yeah, and I'll say another thing that I feel like Little Women and Barbie have in common, and, like, Greta Gerwig's films have in common, is that they don't apologize for being about women, and they don't apologize for being for women. Like, if other people want to watch the story and enjoy it too, that's fine, but it's not for them.
Yeah. No, I agree. They're unapologetically themselves. And, like, that's one of the things I think that's really great about Lady Bird is Lady Bird, the character, and both her and her mother, the two women in that story, are both pretty unsympathetic in a lot of that. And the movie is not them being redeemed by a man. You know, the movie is just kind of allowing them to exist in their humanity. Which is a thing that I think Greta Gerwig really excels at in the way that she portrays characters.
Yeah, it's radical.
Yeah, I agree. Well, do we have any more that we would like to say about this motion picture?
I don't think we do. I just loved it. I'm so happy that you loved it as well. We saw it twice in the theater, which we've seen three movies in the theater in the year 2023. One of them was a private screening of Cocaine Bear, and two of them were the Barbie movies. So
I have a feeling I'm going to need to go see it in theaters again as well. It's a movie that sort of, it takes you on such a ride that you kind of, I think, need to probably experience it twice.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Oof. Well, this was a delight. We would love to hear anybody's thoughts on the Barbie movie. We're going to be kind of switching up our schedule slightly and releasing episodes every other week. So our next episode, I believe, is going to be Red, White, and Royal Blue, book to film, which is a movie that we had differing opinions on. And I think Kelsey's going to come back and also give her also differing opinion on the subject matter.
Oh, I'm so interested. I'm so interested to hear that. Yeah, that'll be great.
That'll be super fun. So if you have thoughts on Red, White, and Royal Blue or Barbie or anything, you know, we want to hear them. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And you can send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. It has been a fun summer of talking about different fun, colorful, gay things. And I'm glad it gets to continue.
Yep. Till next time.
Take care.